This is the Presentation Podcast, Season 7, Episode 154. This episode, Troy, Sandy, and Nolan talk about their experiences of being a presentation designer while working for another designer. To get things started, here are the show hosts, Nolan Hames, Sandra Johnson, and Troy Caller.
Hi, I'm Troy Caller from TLC Creative Services, Inc. We are based in Southern California.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. I'm Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
And I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative in Montclair, New Jersey.
Okay, guys, we are back together. We got to talk about what's happening because, well, last episode I did, it was just me doing a quick intro and we kind of re-kicked off the whole animation thing. And in this episode, I want to hear what's happening. And I know based on our notes, we have a ton of news. So we get to talk a lot right now. This is fun. Nolan, what's happening with you?
Yeah, just this whole month is sort of chaos. We had a number of trips in and out, like fly in, which is what you're used to doing, just not with two children as well.
Exactly.
Flying in, then the next day flying back out, and weddings this weekend, and a home renovation that is proceeding. Hopefully the mic doesn't pick up all the hammering and everything that's happening right outside my window, but that is progressing. And yeah, in the middle of it all, just this is my like month of training. I feel like every other day I've got a client training, which is good.
Good.
So, yeah. So.
Is that all remote or in person?
Yeah, everything's remote. I am going out to San Francisco to speak at a conference in August, a training there. But yeah, everything else is remote for now.
Fantastic.
And you, Sandy, what's happening with you?
Well, let's see. Okay, on the top of mind is my baby, my youngest child, Drew. My son just got engaged this last weekend.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool. They're not planning on getting married for a couple of years, but it's new and exciting for us. Welcome Alina to the family.
Oh, and they're where?
Denver. They both live in Denver. Exactly.
Cool.
And let's see, tons of summer fun activities. You know, Minnesota only has 5 months of summer, maybe four. And so we take advantage of it. But our big deal is being on the river. And we've moved our boat closer to our home so we're 4 minutes away.
Oh, wow.
So wow, you can walk there.
We can bike there.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice.
Nice.
I mean, yes, we could walk, but let's see. Busy at work. and I'm only saying that because I had it's relative, but a lull in the last month. And I know what's going to happen when my big clients are quiet like that. And by big, I just mean large companies. I know for some reason they decide they need to spend their money or whatever. And so I've been slammed. It's wonderful. Life is good. How about you, Troy?
Oh, more of the same. So Nolan just returned from an amazing getaway with Lori. We were in Kauai for a couple of weeks and
nice.
It looked amazing.
Thank you. It was work and it was fun. We had fun every morning and worked. I finished off one of the books I've been working on. We worked on it. We got a new hire in process. So, you know, there was a lot of the business admin side of things is growing all the time. Mm-hmm. So it takes, you know, we've got to literally get away now.
Running your business takes some time, doesn't it?
So, and I left from Hawaii. And when I mean left, I left Lori there. So I left Kauai and took a very long day of flights to get to a meeting in Barcelona. So I went from one area to another and enjoyed Barcelona for a little while. And that was fantastic. And Sandy, same thing. Pretty much just nonstop design work, corporate events right now. It is just
good for you.
Wonderfully bananas with how many mm-hmm. things are going on. Actually, I had a really cool one. This is also in the what's happening, because as I sat down for this, Lori's like, hey, this is really cool. And I watched a really cool PowerPoint animation. I'm like, oh, that was really cool. And a lot of lightning effects and this mm-hmm. and that. She's like, this is kind of like almost a childhood dream. I get to do the walk-on animation for Mark Hamill at Comic-Con. Ooh.
Wow.
So she was like,
wow.
Like, hero, I think is whatever. Anyways, that was just kind of a funny little what's happening, because that happened as I kind of walked by Lori's work area, and she quickly showed me something and explained what was her thing. Hey, let's move on to some industry news, because I know we've got a lot of fun things in here.
Yeah, a lot going on. Sandy, kick it off.
Well, I was going to say, can I start? Because this is, I love making this announcement every year. All three of us have been renewed as Microsoft MVPs in the PowerPoint category, I assume, gentlemen?
Yes.
I fooled them all again. I'm so thinking I know what I'm talking about.
It was a great way to start the month, more or less, you know.
Yeah.
This little announcement.
Congratulations to you, too.
Always a little trepidation. I'm on, will I get an email? Because it is a metric of unknowns that do the deciding there at Microsoft.
And for everybody who always asks, do we get paid for this? No, but we did get, no, it's very important. We did get a coffee mug and a sweatshirt, right?
I haven't received mine yet.
You haven't?
Oh. No, I haven't either.
Well, you have?
No, I'm trying to figure out what the rules are for getting that, because Rick Bretschneider announced his like weeks ago before.
Yeah, I got mine last week, but
oh my gosh.
I'm sure it's in the mail. Now I feel guilty.
What else we got happening in news? There's a
new book on the horizon. It's going to be published in September by our friend Cole and former guest Cole Nussbaumer Naflick, of Storytelling with Data fame, I guess. So this is going to be her third book, and this one is called Storytelling with You. And from all the marketing, it is just about presentation. I'm sure data will come in there a little bit, but it is about, quote, planning, creating, and delivering stellar presentations. So I know Cole's been focusing, you know, a little bit more recently on just delivering information rather than just, you know, delivering data. So that should be out in September. We'll put a link in. You can pre-order it from Amazon and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I will be doing that one. That's awesome.
Absolutely. Yeah.
By the way, when somebody does write a book, pre-order it, because that really helps on Amazon and with the publishing
ratings
and all that.
Exactly.
Rate it when you get it. Troy, what do you got?
I got a great one. I'm actually really excited about this. So this is about Slidewise. I think one of the most stellar additions to the PowerPoint world this year. New feature coming. So I don't think anybody has this, except for me on my computer. This is really exciting. So there is a new feature coming. It is an audit and management of slide transitions. I will explain it very quickly, but I guarantee it's coming, and it might be out by the time, the podcast releasing a couple of days, and I'm running the beta version. I literally emailed Slidewise folks, New Power people, and said, here's something that's missing, because I had just done another big conference, 300 slides, and one of the slides had an auto transition, had left in there, so all of a sudden it advanced to the next slide. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, first of all, how did I miss it? Well, it was 300 slides, and most of them given to me kind of last minute, and it slipped through there. I was like, I need an audit. Now, I've talked to Microsoft. When they say, hey, what would you like to see? I'm like, we need a better way to just see what transitions are in use. You know, it's very painful in PowerPoint. I mean, the way I do it, maybe this is a good question. I'm going to make this a side conversation. When I want to see what animations are, I mean, it's easy. Select all, none, fade, they're all the same. Very rarely that. But if you want to see slide by slide, I go into slide sorter view, go to the transitions tab, and you just arrow through each one to look at the transitions tab to see when it changes. Very painful, slow process. Mm-hmm. So anyways.
This is great.
Slidewise will have a new icon at the top. And when you click it, it literally shows you all of your slides, 1 through 10 or 1 through 300, and it'll tell you what transition is applied, how long the duration is, and if there's an auto transition there, and you can sort by each of those. So you could literally say, show me all the slides, and then you can also edit them right there. These guys are just doing something that Microsoft hasn't put in that we've talked about for over 10 years. When they say, hey, what's missing?
I can't wait for this, because literally this morning, I needed that. And the reason is, traditionally, all my when I train, all my slides were on quick fades. That's generally what I did. Mm-hmm. But in this world of online, I've removed all those to none, because I don't like the little lagging or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I still have slides now and then that still have the old transitions and haven't gotten on. And I usually discover that while I'm training. I'm like, I didn't like that there. But it is very difficult to go through everything and figure out what still has a fade on it. And I can't do I can't select everything and take them off, because I do have morph transitions that I need to keep.
And that's
right.
Morph was the other reason. I was like,
yes.
And when we were talking back and forth, they're like, and you know, they're like, you can sort by this. I'm like, I could actually click sort by type and I could get all the morphs into one category and then I can click them. Cause a lot of times morphs are rollovers, which just means they become a really long fade transition. So I'm actually more worried about morphs not morphing and kind of creating this very slow effect. You know, if it's a 2 second morph or a 5 second morph or a really fast morph, you know, anyways, it's just this amazing way of sorting. So slide wise, everybody, it's like the best, I don't know what 20, 30, 40, 50 bucks. I don't know. It keeps getting better. And they developed the whole thing in about 2 weeks, I'd say. I mean, this is like, hey, this is an idea. And they're like, oh, well, give us some more details. The next thing I know, like, hey, here's a beta build. What do you think?
Yeah.
Amazing.
That's great for self-running presentations too. You know,
doing self-running, Sandy, you ever had one where you update, you add a new slide and it doesn't have the auto transition.
Yes.
And suddenly your self-running stops self-running.
Just happened to me when I was collaborating with somebody, right? Just collaborating. And she's going, it doesn't work. It doesn't loop anymore. And I found out why, but it takes longer. Okay. So what else? SketchUp. I have not used this, but I think what's really cool is that it's a newer 3D graphic app. It's not Microsoft, but it is now compatible with Microsoft PowerPoint. You can insert .skp files to have 3D. Now, have you used it?
Oh, yeah, lots.
Oh, I haven't. Yep.
Oh, SketchUp was originally...
it's been around for a while.
It was originally a Google application, so it kind of got... It was free and wide use, and then somebody bought it along the way, and it got even more... It's a major 3D...
That's why I'm thinking it's newer.
It's a major 3D app, and it's out there, but it has its own file format, SKP, right? SketchUp?
No. SKP.
Anyways, I think that's awesome that now Microsoft's going to... you know, offer it in the, it's in the insert 3D models, right? It's
cool.
Yeah. It's just another,
they needed that because there were limits that made it difficult to work with some of the clients.
I'm not going to say it supports all the features of 3D models, but I guess say there's a new one in there. So that's pretty exciting.
Okay.
I've got two here right in a row really quick. Cause I know a few more. So here's one. I just have an annoyance question and maybe this is for everybody listening. I'm using Outlook. I live by Outlook, Microsoft Outlook, desktop, Windows, just to clarify it. Do you guys suddenly have a user interface change so that the icons to select, you know, like if you're looking at email, calendar, contacts, it's now up on the left. It's like a vertical column on the left. It's no longer along the bottom.
I've been complaining on Twitter about this for months.
Troy, is this the new Outlook or the old Outlook?
No, it's the old Outlook.
I've had the redesign. It has the rounded ribbon corners.
Well,
but suddenly this thing just showed up and I don't like it because it's literally left to right is the limited space, vertical. I mean, like this is
just you wait. Just
I'm not a fan.
Wait. Is it so, Sandy? Troy is still on the technical old Outlook.
He's technically on the old one.
Okay,
but your question is in your upper right hand corner. There's an option to try the new Outlook.
It's turned off.
Yes. Do not turn it on.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. So this is a whole other episode, and this isn't the Outlook podcast. But yeah, the new new Outlook is coming or has been. It's
available as a beta.
Nobody is happy. It's been available for like 2 years, and it's terrible.
I don't have the try it now turned on, and those icons are over there, and it's really throwing me off. But more importantly, it just uses up more space vertically. You know, anyways, you know,
it's really difficult to get used to.
It just happened last week, and I'm so unclear. Okay, let me move on to something that's PowerPoint related for the news. So this one's actually very interesting. I'm putting it out there as a public service, a PSA, public service announcement, just in case. This is in presenter view. So there are two parts to this. First of all, if you're running the current channel preview, so the sort of beta, not the beta of that, you can now edit your presenter notes while in presenter view. So while you're presenting, you can edit your notes, and that's phenomenal. So if you're running the current channel with the preview, so the sort of beta, not the beta, you can now click on the presenter notes. There's a white border happening, and you can type and edit the notes in there. That is fantastic. I mean, I'm very excited about this. I will say there should be a lot more features coming into this whole presenter view and notes and other things. But this is a big step. But here's the bug. A friend of mine, Brandon Lee, call out to you for experiencing the wonderful issues of this at a show site. He's running the current channel. So just no preview. I mean, it's the corporate standard version, which we run on all of our show computers, so we know it's stable. It looks like they sort of implemented it. If you roll your mouse over and you go to scroll your notes for the presenter, it changes the focus to the notes and you can no longer advance your slides until you click
out of the
notes area. So the way I run, a lot of people run it now, is we'll scroll the notes because people are using presenter view and the confidence monitors, but I'm not clicking anything. I'm just able to move my mouse over and scroll, and the presenter has the clicker. So they advance to the next slide when they're ready to. So, in the middle of scroll, they can advance. Well, a whole series of presenters couldn't advance, and suddenly it's a bug. But here's the important thing, or the really fun thing about this. I identified it. I made a video because on my main computer here, I could say, hey, look, I can edit, and look, I can advance the next slide. I went over to show computer and I could say, hey, look, I can scroll, but now I can't do it. So I gave Microsoft a video literally showing here is the problem in the exact build. I would say within 6 hours, that email to Microsoft expanded to be several of their project management stuff. And by end of day, we've identified the issue and basically a fix is in process.
Excellent.
I should probably go turn on that computer and see if it's fixed now. I didn't actually follow up. But, a very, very fast reaction time from a big company, but there is a bug. So if you're on the current kind channel and you're presenting, be careful, because right now it could hang up your ability to advance your slides the way you're expecting them to advance. So there. Okay, what else we got in the fun news world of presentations?
In the category of how much is a presentation worth, there was a headline this week. City of Racine has spent $200,000 in attorney fees trying not to have a PowerPoint released. So we'll put a link in, or you can just Google, I guess, Racine, PowerPoint. Just sort of city politics with... there was a presentation that was internal, but then they gave it to some councilman who released it. Then they said, oh no, you can't look at it. And they're trying to get it back. And it's just ridiculous because everyone's apparently has already seen it, and it doesn't really contain anything that ridiculous or confidential, but yeah. So they're spending lots of money to try to keep a PowerPoint secret. so anyway, it's a fun article. You can take a look at that. But back to I guess other real news. Microsoft.
Another update. To keep PowerPoint hushed, that's good.
Well, okay, maybe.
Well, I'm sure that's not the first.
Maybe something that costs $200,000 to do or more. Microsoft is finally implementing line spacing on PowerPoint for the iPad. I never use it on, I never do any actual editing on iOS. So I never even knew that was a thing, but you can only do like 1.5, 2.0, 2.5. But anyway, so they're finally fixing that after getting, I guess, asked about it for years. So that's coming up. Yeah. Small little thing. What else?
Well, let's wrap it up. Let's wrap it up. And I just want us to end on this really fun event that just happened recently. I think it was yesterday, actually, the Microsoft Office National Championships. Have you heard of that?
No,
not really.
It's been going on for years, and I randomly pay attention to it. But this year's competition had 44,000 students competing, and they're ages 13 to 22. So I'm thinking, junior high to college age, and there's six different tracks. The grand champion this year was a gentleman. A young man, Andrew Saladin from Texas, and he took the top honor. So overall, he took the top honor, but he won in the Excel track. Last year, though, he was the PowerPoint champion.
Yes, so, PowerPoint. Didn't even know we had a competition.
So here's a quick summary of what the competitors do. They're given, each of the finalists were given a printed copy of a document, a spreadsheet, or a presentation. And this is kind of what I do when I'm training people. I give them a script and I have them create designs. But anyway, to recreate, along with printed instructions and digital assets, they're scored based on the accuracy of the recreation compared to the original. And that's a quote, end quote. Cool. All right. It looks like top prizes. So I'm thinking the national champion won $3,000 scholarship, which is really fun. And we're really not making it up. It's fun. We'll put a link in this.
And it seems like an Onion headline.
Yeah, it does. Doesn't it? That's really, perfect. Anyway, we'll put a link to the report.
And that's the news.
That's the news.
Okay, we've talked about client management before, as well as working for yourself versus working for a company or an agency, but we haven't really talked about working for another designer. It's one thing if the person approving and paying for your work is, you know, we'll just say a typical client. In other words, they're not the design end, they're the client. But what happens when that person paying for your work is another designer? What happens when that other designer is scrutinizing not just the work, you know, not just what everything looks like, but how you did it or how you worked?
Or why?
That's what we're going to talk about today, and what it's like working for and answering to another designer.
All right. I really like this topic, and I've been wanting to do it for a while because I've been on all sides of this equation for over the years. I've worked for senior designers and art directors when I was on staff. I've been that art director and manager hiring other designers at agencies. And I've probably hired hundreds of freelancers over the years, which we're definitely going to talk about, and I continue to do so today. But first, let's talk about probably the most typical situation where a designer would work for another designer. And that's in a staff situation, right? So you're reporting to an art director or a creative director or a senior designer. Who's been in that situation?
I will start. So I think this is a great conversation topic. So thank you, Nolan. And since you have kind of said it, I've been thinking a lot about it because Lori and I, we're obviously on the other side of the conversation more often. We are the designer or the art director that others work for. So I will throw it out there that I've never been a full-time employee as a designer. By the way, that wasn't an end. I've been a full-time employee. I've just never been a full-time employee as a designer. So I've never...
Someone else. Yeah, as someone else's employee.
But I've been brought into organizations as an addition to a project team many times where there is an art director or a design lead, or as the episode title says, I'm working for another designer. So I think I've been on both sides of it, of this conversation. So I'm really curious where we're going to go with this.
And Sandy?
Well, let's see. I've worked with and for create and see if I'm addressing this correctly. I've worked with and for creative directors and art directors with an agency as my client and with a corporation as my client. And each of those clients will, you know, they have their own internal creative directors, art directors, and their assignment is to work with me to get a product. And so I guess that qualifies.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Okay. Yeah. Okay. And we'll spend the next hour defining art director and creative director. No, in the two agencies that I worked at, I did report to art directors at times and senior designers. And I had both kinds, right? There's the art director that really wants you to succeed and do your best work and bring your ideas to life. And then there's the art director that sees you as a pair of arms, right? So sort of like execute their vision. Obviously, the latter is what you hate to have as a boss, but fortunately for me, that happened, I think, more on the print side, not presentation. Usually when it came to presentation, you'd probably agree with this, Sandy, my bosses usually deferred to me as the expert, right? Mm-hmm. They contributed and sometimes gave great guidance, but usually they didn't micromanage because, as we know, they more often than not just didn't really understand presentation or what was going on, right?
I guess technically there's been a few... someone that's tried to micromanage, but like you said, they eventually defer if I can justify my decisions, and which I always can.
And of course, we have clients that micromanage, right? Move that in a half an inch to the right. Like, all right, fine.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever. But let's flip this around then and talk about being the art director and having another staff designer work under you. Who's been there?
So that was I was in that position in my last agency for about 5 years. And that's the situation I'm in now, right? And Troy is in now, right? You're hiring freelancers or staff people. I'm going to admit, I don't think I was the best boss in the world when I was in the agency world. I definitely wasn't a micromanager. And to this day, I really give my designers tons of leeway and agency to do what I think works, you know, maybe sometimes too much. But I think the reason there's sort of never... there's never one design solution to any problem, right? And I always tried and, you know, do try to hire people who are better designers than I am. That was always my, you know, you always want to hire somebody smarter than you or attempt to. That's sort of good hiring advice, I think. But overall, like, I want to be surprised and I want to be jealous, like, of what others do, right?
Exactly.
I mean, I've hired some, like, young, you know, right out of college designers, and I'm, like, jealous of, like, what they come up with. I'm like, oh, I wouldn't have thought of that. Like, that's really cool. Like, run with it. And, you know, I'll try not to take too much credit for it. But anyway, yeah. So I sort of also want to – here, I'll do a little bit of a tangent, but I think it's appropriate. When I was a theater director and I worked with playwrights, we would always have with the new works, we'd always have an initial conversation. You know, we'd sit down at a diner. And what I did as a director was, after reading their play, I'd sit down with them. I'd say, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Playwright, this is what your play is about. And I'd go on and say, this is what it means to me, this, but I was, you know, fairly direct with it. I didn't say, like, well, what were you trying to say with this at that point? And because that got it out of the way, because if the playwright at that point was like, you don't understand me at all, you don't get it, like, it's totally wrong, then, you know, we part ways then. But most often, you know, we would start a relationship and I'd direct the play. And I remember there was one playwright who I worked with a bunch of times. He told me later on, like years later, he said, when we had that first meeting and we talked about the play, I didn't agree at all with what you said about my play.
Oh my gosh.
I thought you were talented. I thought you were smart. You had a correct approach. This is the mark of a smart playwright. Of course, he said, just because it wasn't my vision, it doesn't mean it wasn't a valid vision. Mm-hmm. And I was excited to work with you to see where that went. And of course, we probably went. And I just really like, so I kind of feel that way when it comes to design and other designers. It may not be what I had intended, but it doesn't mean it's wrong. And it doesn't mean it's not good. And it doesn't mean, you know, it's not
going to be successful. You shouldn't use it. You hired someone and you don't... smarter than you in that. I mean, they hired someone smarter than them.
Yeah. Or maybe, or, you know, just different. Yeah. But again, when you're talking about creative things, there's no one solution. There's no, you know, sort of right way. And I think that's what's exciting. It's like for the playwrights, it was like, oh, like, this isn't what I thought. I'm excited to, like, go down this. And with a creative projects, like, that's not what I was envisioning, but this is awesome. Let's go with it.
No,
that's awesome.
Yeah. You're not old enough to do all the things you've done in your life.
So my takeaway on that was, not only did people recognize Nolan's talent when he was, like, I don't know, 12 and doing these things, but he worked in a diner. How New York is that? Because, you know, here in California, we'd say, let's go to the coffee shop. And
West Side Diner on 9th Avenue.
That is, we'd say Caribou.
The West Side Diner and Hell's Kitchen and at Moore Theater has been, you know, produced and, you know, birthed in that diner than anywhere else probably in the world.
Anyway. That's awesome. Yeah. I don't even know how to follow that up because, you know, we're TLC Creative Services is a team of 11, which includes myself and Lori in that count. So, I mean, this conversation is daily life, or at least your, you know, what you said, Sandy's like, let's flip it. And do you have people that, you know, mm-hmm. working for you? Yeah. That's like what we do on a daily life, you know, being an active designer and working with other agencies and organizations, sometimes as the working for, so sometimes our staff are working for another designer or creative director. I think it's a huge benefit to me and everyone else. I mean, for me, I get to see both sides of it. For my staff, they get to go, oh, maybe Troy isn't so wacky after all. I don't know what they think, but, you know, at least they're in that position too.
But what's your style? Like, if you're like, when you're interviewing a new designer, like, do you expect designers to say, Troy, Lori, what do you want? Like, what should I do? Or do you just say, hey, you know, designer, here's the brief, like, check in next week. And, like, I'm excited to see what you come up with. Like, what's,
you know, this is a whole conversation and it's really timely because we have a couple of new designers on our staff. We have one, a video editor that's working his way into presentation work. And what's really funny is, or not really funny, it's really timely. Hired him a lot based on, I mean, just amazing After Effects skills. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that'll translate over into presentation work. Cause that's where I came from. I did Flash animation back in the day and I did a lot of multimedia and I took all that and translated into PowerPoint. Like, how do I make that effect happen here? It's obviously 90 steps instead of 9 steps. And we just haven't had a lot of highly animated things to get him into. So for this instance, it's a lot of, here is exactly what you need to do. This is a medical deck. This is all data, and this is the way it needs to look. There's not really a lot of creative license. We're making all the tables in this color scheme. We're making all the charts use these, and this color represents this. We got to make it consistent. So it's a lot of our, you know, production work. So it does depend on the thing. On other things, this is really funny. I just handed off yesterday to a client. We had some large format printing. We're supporting an event. And we also did most of the print design work for the event. Some of it, because it was close enough, I went ahead and drove out to just say hi to everybody. Haven't seen everybody in person for 2 years. So I delivered this giant carrot. No joke. They're like, what are you doing here, Troy? I was like, I'm delivering fresh produce. It was like a 4 foot high carrot. And it's a meter board of, you know, showing their, for a, not a fundraiser, what do you call it? A corporate team building event, but they're going to a food bank and they're doing some stuff. So I delivered a giant carrot signage. In that case, same designer. I was like, hey, here's the brief. We need to design a 4 foot high carrot that has a meter board from 0 to 2000. Be creative. Here's their corporate colors. See if you can integrate them. It's literally one instance where we're telling a new designer, here's exactly what you need to do. You have very little leeway. The other one is like, here, the idea is carrot. Go with it.
But I mean, I know you do a lot of production work, but I mean, do you outsource delegate more of the ground up design to your designers?
Yeah, we try to. That's our goal, is that everybody's self-sufficient. They get the client info and they run with it. And we are literally just a sound. We're more art director, sounding board. Hey, why is this? Could this fit here? And we let them go with it.
And I think, you know, from my perspective, I talked about this, like, I want to be surprised, because if I'm not surprised, it's probably not the best work, right?
Like, that's a really good statement. Yeah. And we do look for that. Sometimes the surprises are, I'm surprised you would think that course. Is the direction, but right. Other times it's like, that's amazing.
Do you think brown over black is an attractive, okay, color theme, but okay.
But, you know, I think that the conversation is so dynamic, because sometimes the ability to go in a broad stroke of whatever you want is fantastic. And other times it can be a disaster, like, because suddenly by the time it escalates up to the final decision maker, they're like, this isn't at all. Who directed this? This isn't what we want to accomplish. And you're like, well, I was given free rein to go anywhere we want. So this is where we evolve to. And I think checkpoints along the way are really helpful.
Oh, yeah. We'll talk about this, but not letting a designer get too far down the road without sort of seeing.
I think it happens in corporate structures all the time, where the key decision maker isn't brought in until the end because they want to protect their schedule. Anyway, okay, hey, Sandy, what do you got to say from the agency side? Probably, what do you got to say about this?
I never worked on a creative team when I was in the agency world. I was an account executive. And so I acted as the liaison between the client contact and the creative team. So I would give them the strategic document with the direction, the creative blueprint, as I've referenced in the past. And that was all the direction they would get, other than following brand guidelines, all that. I wasn't their boss, but I was directing the creative and giving them the information that they needed. Never presentation design at that point. That was always done by account execs, and it had, in those days, all bullet points. it was awful.
Blue background, yellow text. Yeah, for the headline.
It was ridiculous. Right. So that's basically my exposure with working with someone else in a director role, I should say. I don't know.
All right. Well, let's talk about hiring sort of a designer. Because the reason I initially wanted to do this was because I hire and interview a lot of freelance designers to work as contractors. And we know it's incredibly difficult to find good presentation designers or even a presentation designer. But it's not, you know, for me, it's not just because of their design skills. It's their sort of relationship skills and how they work. And I've got a lot to say about what makes a good freelancer. But what do you think about this? Like, what do you look for when you hire another designer? Troy, you've obviously done a lot of hiring. What attracts you and what turns you off?
Sandy, do you want to start this conversation? I don't want to taint it. I want to hear where somebody else goes.
Sure. No, I guess my initial response is it varies. For example, when I have a long-term client with regular type work, you know, they come to me with, I don't even need direction anymore. I want to work with someone who already knows the client, their brand, and slide design. So that means it's, they're not new. I've already established them. They're familiar with the client. Responsiveness and communication are key in the scenario, right? Because typically these types of projects have a tighter deadline. They're more of a cleanup kind of thing. But I'm willing to bend that. Like one of my freelancers, if she gets really busy, the communication, I mean, as with all of us perhaps, but she can tend to be weaker on the communication slide. But you know what? She doesn't need direction from me. She can take a project and she can run with it. So that's perfect for that scenario. For new clients, I'll consider a freelancer's portfolio first and then make a final decision based on their other skills. So it helps me. What happens is, and I'm curious to see what you guys are going to say, but I have Chloe, an account executive slash project manager, on my side, and she manages the communication. She manages the project deadlines, milestones, all that. So we are on top of it. If someone is slow in responding, she gets it. She does the communications for me. Troy, you, okay. What
so
about
I'm
you?
Follow that. This is good. I'm totally okay. In a line. Or I would say presentation or design skills are important, but I think we've evolved more to looking at some of the soft skills, relationship skills, communication skills, sure. File organization skills. I mean, I think those are the things that really make a successful designer. They really differentiate somebody that's not going to evolve past a junior role of always being production to mm-hmm. somebody that can like take a project as a whole, because there is communication needs, there is organization needs, there is naming needs, there is, it just gets to the point of great, you gave me a final end product, but it's kind of a disaster on the back end. Like, what do I, so I think we're looking more at those skills at that now. I think those are the skills that companies hire, or those are the people that become the stars of a company or a department, and they get retained and sought after because of skills that aren't actually design oriented. First, they have to have the design skills, but there's a big gap in designers hire, you know, freelance, independent, and within, you know, company structures. And you can usually boil it down to those, that side. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yep. To what Sandy was saying, responsiveness is huge for me, right? Returning emails quickly, listening and acting on all notes and sort of directions given, and also just wanting to learn more, sort of, and being open to doing things differently than they may be used to. And that I have traditionally had success in hiring non-presentation designers and sort of, you know, teaching them the presentation. And so that's important too. But I think my favorite freelancers I work with are people I can rely on to meet deadlines. That's yes. obviously a huge yes. thing, right? But, you know, if a client needs something on Friday and I tell my freelancer that, you know, or say Thursday, you know, then the ones that I really rely on, I can be certain that they're going to get that file to me. And here's the other thing. I don't even need to make a note about it. Now, I don't have a Chloe, so I don't have like my whole project board where I check in every day. I mean, yes, I have, you know, some major check-ins here and there, but if I'm mm-hmm. like throwing things back and forth and I just like send it off to a freelancer to like to make, you know, an hour's worth of edits, I just expect to get it back the end of the day or maybe tomorrow. And I don't really have to follow up on them because if I do, that's a problem. So, you know, something will appear in my email and I'm like, oh, okay, great. These are the edits mm-hmm. I needed. Boom, off to the client. Like, I don't have to track that.
Exactly.
So, and that's sort of super important. Things I can't stand is when they claim to know something or work in a certain way and they don't. Last year I hired a young designer who told me she had a great design portfolio, told me she knew InDesign very well. And you don't always know those things just from looking at a portfolio. So I gave her a simple, like 3 or 4 page document to design and just reminded her, said, just make paragraph and character styles. She said, oh, of course, I always do. Well, not only does the file come back with no styles applied, but this blew my mind. Every paragraph was its own unthreaded text box.
Just like PowerPoint.
Just like PowerPoint.
She was a PowerPoint designer. She was claimed to be a print designer.
That's one of my big hangups. I just unthreaded box. Like, why can't we just make these things flow? Anyways.
Yeah. Anyway.
I totally get that.
It's like, well, what are you going to do? So that's it. And that's why you give somebody a 3 or 4 page document to start. You don't give them the 100 page, you know, rush.
Okay. Stuff. So I'll do a little tangent here, Nolan. Yeah. When we hired in previous years, we actually sent out what we called the PowerPoint test. Mm-hmm. And it was a series of slides, and we still utilize it, but not as a first indication of what people can do, because people don't know PowerPoint. We're excited that they're, you know, an Adobe designer, and we can take those skills and translate them into another program. But, you know, and it's a really neat thing. So, you know, title slide, and it has the notes on it. But then the next slide, we'll put the information in the presenter notes. Like, you have to look everywhere to find what you want to do. And it was like 6 slides, and it should take somebody about an hour. And we've hired people, some of our best employees came from that skills test with, like, we were totally surprised would be a good example. We had one person, we're like, okay, he's a little bit far away for the commute, but really wants the, you know, work in this field, and his end result is amazing. Now, looking at the back end, we're like, whoa, this is so built wrong. I mean, there's just layering or flat. And, you know, from a PowerPoint perspective, it looked great, but it was horribly built. But we're like, okay, we could teach those skills. So we did it. We've actually shifted from that. That's almost the follow-up now. Once we decide somebody has good, like I'll say, those soft skills, we'll hand them the PowerPoint and say, hey, here's the medium we work in. Just, you know, verify you're good with this and we can see some progress there. But we actually have a pretty cool skills test that Lori's put together, and it doesn't have anything to do with presentation. It's all about design and understanding communication. We give a very short brief. We say, hey, here's a social media ad. Here's the details. Here's where you get the assets online. Here's a style guide for the company, fictitious client. And we see what people come up with. Like, can you follow through without being handed every single detail? And another one, ironically, is an InDesign project. It's very, very simple. It's like, hey, make these 3 edits. And if they don't know how to do, I can't remember if it's a character style or a paragraph style, but one of them is update this style so it ripples through everything. And it would be, if anybody did it manually, like, you know, like, well, let's make all these characters become this, it would be horrible to do it manually. But, you know, if you set it as a style and you hit apply, it should ripple through in about 9 seconds, you're done. Anyways, total tangent there, but we have shifted the way we talk to designers. Ironically, we don't get those type of requests when we're being hired, but maybe it's just reputation. You know, even if it's one of our designers, like, can they do it? We say yes. And they're like, okay, great. They're on the team. So I think that is questionable sometimes. Like, wow, you just, now, hold on. I do have to back up here, Nolan, because you said one of the things you hate is somebody who says they can't do it and you hired them.
He said they can do it, but they
don't have any experience. So right. We wouldn't be our own company if we only did the things we said we could do. This was probably Lori married me and knew she was in trouble immediately because a lot of things, but as a design company, I mean, the company was hers to start with. I had another company and I finally joined her. Basically I became the T of the TLC creative. It wasn't there originally, but somebody would call and say, hey, can you do this? Now you got to remember, I was doing flash animation. I was doing websites. I was doing multimedia. Remember CD-ROMs, you know, interactive CDs. Yeah. We were doing stuff like that. And people would call and say, hey, we need this delivered. We need to do this. Like, absolutely. That'll be awesome. Wait till you see what we give you. Hang up the phone. And she'd like say, do we say yes to that? Do we know what that is? I was like, we are going to know exactly what it is in about 2 weeks. You know? So, Nolan, I think people have to stretch, because if they just said yes to everything they know that they learned in school, they would never get it. But
yeah, no, but this is a good point, because yes, I've certainly done, you know, similar things as well. And, you know, they're famous stories about, you know, people taking the, but here's the thing. When you're working for a designer, it's one thing to, you know, let's say, you know, you're creating a big poster or whatever, you know, for a client. You're like, well, I don't know how to do large format, but you figure it out. You talk to the printer. You're like, you do your research. You figure out how to do it.
Before you turn it over.
Right. Or you do it in such a way that it doesn't matter. Like, oh, the printer just needs a flat JPEG, whatever. Okay, well, it doesn't matter how you get to that flat JPEG. But with especially with PowerPoint and well, other programs, if you don't build the back end correctly, it really messes things mm-hmm. up. So like when I, you know, let's just say, for example, you know, here's a whole presentation and there are 50 charts in there and I'd like you to design everything. Oh, well, I don't know how to do charts in PowerPoint, but I'm not going to say that. So I'm going to do them all, you know, by hand in Illustrator and output, you know, flat JPEGs and drop them in. And then I'm like, oh, this looks great. Well, I need to edit this number. What? And then you realize, yeah, okay, they thought they were doing something good and figuring it out, but no, they should have just said, hey, you know, I don't know how to do this, or how would you prefer I do this? That's the problem.
Communication's key. Yeah. So okay, I'll transition us. How's okay, that? I'll good. Pull us off yes. that. So how about working with another designer, but as a peer? In other words, you're collaborating on a project. Has anyone done, you know, kind of a true peer relationship where you're both on a project, but no one's the actual, you're in charge lead?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's hard to do. Sort of, it reminds me of songwriting duos, right? You imagine it being this like magical, like 50-50 yes. Lennon-McCartney process. But when you like really hear how it works, it's like, it was 95% one guy and the other guy like threw in a lyric, right? I mean, that's kind of, you know, how it often ends up.
Didn't you see the Carole King musical? That was the best description of a writing duo ever.
I have not seen it. No,
oh, well, it's gone now. I saw it in New York. It's I think it's long since left, but
you're in New York more than I am, Troy.
I think in design, we get that a lot.
Yeah. I think I've had some good experiences working in a design team, like where there might be four or five designers all sort of doing different presentations or parts of like a big event or something. So you're all kind of on the same page, but you kind of have your own lanes and, you know, it's okay. Like, oh, let me jump over there and like suggest this, or like, oh, that was a good idea. I'm going to take that from your design. Like, I think that works, and that's actually kind of really fun. Personal story. Last year, my extended family rented a house down in Mexico for my father's 80th birthday. And I asked my brother if he would partner with me to design a t-shirt for the trip, right? In the past, I've done one or he's done one. I said, let's design it together. He's a designer. He's an artist. He's a UX designer. He's ridiculously talented. So I said, first, we should both come up with a bunch of quick ideas and send them to each other. I did that and sent them to him. He didn't do anything. So then I asked him to respond to my ideas and offer some thoughts. And a few of my ideas involved like illustrations of turkeys because it was over Thanksgiving, whatever. And here was his response, a two-line email. He said, no turkeys. Beyond that, I don't have much to add. So, you know, that was my big, like, let's design this together. And it just sort of, I feel like there have been more situations like that. I guess what I'm saying is it's difficult to do sort of a 50-50 design. Have you ever successfully done one, Troy?
Interesting. Conversation on it. So your whole thought there of four or five designers going into the same project with the same guidelines and, you know, direction, but you're all independent. That's where I started. I mean, I was thrown into a large team of probably, I was one of each event ranged from 10 to 14 presentation designers. I'd say they're some of the top people in the country. And being thrown into that, creativity just breeds more creativity. Like, how did you do that? Wait, that's a great idea. So I think that's phenomenal. But that's more than two people. I think when you get down to two people, it's harder because you can't communicate. You have to directly communicate with one person. You can't like, hey, you know, I heard that other people thought you should maybe do this. Well, obviously you're the other person in a two person. So I think the smaller the group, the harder it is sometimes. So you went in a very different direction than I imagined with everything but that four to five thing. I completely agree with everything. I will go with the vantage point that you did. I approach this as a common thing for our projects. And in general, it's overall a good thing. I like to be a part of ad hoc design teams for large corporate events. I get to be a part of many of them, and there is no overall art director. Okay, there's usually like a creative director, mm-hmm. but they're focused on all aspects of staging, and you know, of which our visuals are just one aspect. So there's no one directly over our shoulder saying, "Could you make that chart with a little bit different angle and or something?" You know, mm-hmm. I think everyone working with the same guidelines in a creative manner is the best way to go. I mean, it's the greatest growing experience. That's what we try and do with our team. We try and give everybody, you know, the the ability to work together. I do think there can be a lot of friction. And there's generally that one person on the team that's problematic. And if there's only two people, I hope you're not the one person. Okay. Now that I'm saying this, I realize working with another designer as a peer is actually my life, because my business partner and wife is Lori, and we do projects side by side daily. So I might have to redact a bunch of the information I just said. Let me rethink this whole statement. Sandy, what do you got about this? How do you like working with somebody else?
Well, I have a couple of approaches. One of my current clients, their mission is to replace all synthetic fibers in clothing. So replace it with all natural fibers and still be a high performance, say, athletic wear kind of thing. So I was in charge of creating a presentation, and I needed to make a pair of sneakers that were obviously made from rubber and not rubber, but synthetic rubber and synthetic canvas and all that, and have them turn into a completely natural looking shoe, like made of leaves and things like that. I mean, completely, it's insane, but that was the creative idea.
This is for creative marketing campaign, not an actual product at this point. Or are we trying to make a shoe?
This is
out
for
of leaves?
A presentation. This is okay. A presentation. Okay. One of the slides, my creative idea was we need to morph a rubber shoe into something that looks 100% natural. Mm-hmm. I knew I did not have the skill set in timing and capability to do what I envisioned. So I asked my colleague, my client, creative person, to do it for me. In the past, I would have felt like an idiot. You know, you mean you can't do that? But it was a great, you could call it delegating, you could call it collaborating. I focused on the slides. She designed this amazing Photoshopped shoe. She knew enough about PowerPoint that I was able to animate it, and we were able to literally make the shoe become a natural part of the forest kind of looking thing. So that's an example of, I think I've grown as a designer too. I don't have to feel like because I don't know how to do something, that's okay. Mm-hmm. Get somebody else to do it. So I'm better at asking for help, even if it's the client. Another fun thing is, you know, Echo Swinford and I have put together training presentations, training programs, and we are peers. I mean, in that sense, 100%. We share in the actual presentation design. We share in the actual presentation. So I think that is a great example of working with peers.
Cool.
Yeah. So that
has a lot of twists in it. So you went from an employee supplied designer as a collaboration, peer to peer. You went to obviously a personal friend and great person to work with. I think we can come up with 100 different stories. So I think sometimes peer to peer Nolan is good, mm-hmm. and sometimes it's full of tension.
It can be rough. Yeah.
So moving on, what is your biggest piece of advice that you would give a designer that works for another designer versus a client?
Yeah, it's going to have to be ask questions, especially if you don't know how to do something and you can't figure it out. And again, that's maybe just the stuff that I run into a lot more. But more than that, I think ask how the person wants you to set up things technically. Don't assume that everyone does it the way you do. Don't assume that others will be editing. You know, I do assume that others are going to be editing your work, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yes. I think that's the biggest thing that I think especially young designers don't understand, or even, you know, senior designers. Other people will be editing your work. Now, it might just be making a type change. It might just be like shifting this color because at the last minute the printer said, oh, you know, or the client decided, oh yeah, we're not doing Pantone, just, you know, do a four color process. You just have to be able to globally make those changes, or, you know, the number changes, like, because the CEO, you know, is like, oh, that number's wrong. And at the last minute, Troy, right, what do you got to do? You got to change the chart. So I think that just whole sense of there will be other people working on your work. might be in a small, you know, degree, might be in a big degree. Just understand that.
Okay. So I have another tangent because this is because that is exact. That's literally like my mantra is that PowerPoint, unlike, I mean, if you're doing video, when you render a video, it's locked. I mean, to get edits done, you got to go back to the source material. InDesign or print documents, I mean, it's kind of locked. It's done. You don't expect somebody to just jump in there. PowerPoint is a living thing. It changes and evolves, and somebody will pull a slide from one deck and put it into theirs, and they expect it to be editable. So we continuously are going exactly what you're saying there, Nolan. So this is all positive, you know, is that you have to design with the future flexibility in mind. You can't lock things down to make it perfect for the one presentation and then leave people stranded when they want to repurpose it, because that's like the power of PowerPoint is the fact that you can leverage, steal, use things from other presentation, previous things at a corporate, or, you know, I've seen clients come to me, hey, here's the deck from so-and-so. Could you put this in our branding? Cause I love the way they did this. You know, it's, I mean, that's PowerPoint. I mean, that's its true power. So you got to design that way. Personal opinion. Yeah. So biggest piece of advice, that is a hard one. So with a client, you, the designer, are generally the authority and making the design decisions. I mean, if you're brought on as a designer, you should take the authority and say, I'm going with this because it conveys this to the reader or the audience. But working with another designer or working with a creative director, you may be working within somebody else's vision and you can't make those decisions. You have to say, what is the vision? Okay, so Noel, I'm repeating what you said. Ask questions because you're going to need to know what the rules are. You know, and basically be prepared for your design, you know, to come up with your design process. Or one of my favorite things to do is, hey, here is a design based on what you requested. Here's another option based on what I envision being better for the audience or the way they would interpret this information, or they don't really need the full table. Let's just give them the call outs, you know, be prepared, come in with options. My biggest advice, don't let your ego get in the way of making design your profession, because the difference between an amateur and a professional is one gets paid.
I think we will end on that because I don't have anything to add. That's perfect.
Working with a client, working with others, and working with or for another designer, they're all very different experiences. Our role as a designer and what we communicate along with, I would say, the decisions we make, they're all going to be different experiences depending on the environment of that work setup. So depending on your expertise, your communication style, and your personality, working for another designer or a creative director may be great, or it may be a trying project that you're excited to move on to the next one. Hey, thanks, Nolan. This conversation topic, super great. It's been super. I was a little uncertain how we would go about talking about this. I think we covered a lot of ground, and we each have very different experiences and outlooks on projects like this. So, thanks for pulling it together. I think this was awesome. For everybody listening, thank you for joining us for another PowerPoint Design Conversation. And before we wrap up, let's do some pro and tech tips. Okay, pro and tech tips. I'm going to kick this one off because I am going to go completely non-design, but I'm back to traveling on airplanes a lot. Like 26 hours from Hawaii to Barcelona was a little zany. But I found this new thing. So it's called the it's all caps, TRTL. I'm assuming it means turtle travel pillow. It's pretty dang cool. I highly recommend it if you're going to be on a plane. I now keep it in the car. So it looks like a, Sandy, help me out. What do you call a fleece? It's a fleece little blanket or like a scarf. Yeah. And inside of it, there's a plastic 3D molded elements. When you lean your head back or to the side, it kind of supports you. It leans on your chin. No. It leans on your shoulder. And when you lean against it, there's something there. So your head isn't just bobbing off back and forth when you're sleeping. I found it works in the car too. You put it behind you, it becomes a neck support, you know, like a little pillow, if you will. Anyways, I will put a link to this. It's called the Turtle Travel Pillow. I was I was listening to a travel podcast and somebody's like, here's my my top picks for travel, you know, flight travel things. And I went and looked this one up and I bought one. They're like $30. I'm pretty impressed. Not saying it's the greatest thing, like business class in a lie flat bed, much better, but this one does fill a need.
Awesome. Well, mine is a little different than that. It's a recommendation for one of our colleagues out there in the world of social media. Nick Vischer is an amazing content provider, I think, on YouTube. He provides great instructional video for all kinds of data viz, but focuses on PowerPoint. And so I recommend that you follow him on Twitter. It's at Nick versus at Nick versus PPT. And I will put the link in the notes. Or you can follow him on YouTube and you'll find him under the handle of Spotlight Impact Data Design. Seriously, great PowerPoint tutorials for any skill level.
Cool.
Great. Yeah, I like Nick. I follow him on Twitter. And as we've commented before, his Twitter handle is Nick VS PPT. It's Nick V's PowerPoint, but I always read it as Nick versus PowerPoint.
Yes, so do I. I say that?
Yeah, I think you did probably, which I find hysterical, and I love that.
So. Yes, that's what I thought it was. Of course it is.
All right, so my pro tech and tech tips is downloading online videos. We've talked about this before, and I just added a list because I found a few more solutions for this. Sometimes one solution doesn't work. But if you go to nolanhamescreative.com/goodies, you've got my stock imagery resource page, which recently went to two pages. And I just added yesterday a new section for how to download online videos, and because I found some new ones. So the one I usually use is download, and all of these are on the PDF. Downloadhelper.net is a plugin for Firefox and Chrome. That's the one I usually use. But other ones I also use TubeNinja.net. But the other ones I discovered recently are SaveTheVideo.com, Vimeo Downloader. There's some downloaders just for Vimeo. And then there's a standalone software called Softorino YouTube Converter. You'd have to pay for it, but it does look pretty good. So if you really have to get videos down from YouTube, from Vimeo, there's a whole bunch of solutions there. As I said, sometimes you get errors. Sometimes one doesn't work. Sometimes they have to update their software. So having a lot in your tool belt is healthy for when you really need that video.
Thank you. That was awesome.
This is Troy from TLC Creative Services. Hey, you guys like that? How I wave at you when I say this is Troy? This is Troy from TLC Creative Services, a professional presentation design agency. Check it out, tlccreative.com. If you have a virtual or hybrid event, we are still doing lots in that world. VXPmeeting.com has lots of info. And the PowerPoint blog. Guys, I just did a whole series like the last 3 weeks, I think, covering Clipchamp. Microsoft just acquired this video editing program. Really, really impressed with it as a video editor and some other things. As a matter of fact, this episode, when you listen to it, our guy that's going to be announcing our closeout in just a few minutes, he is actually created in Clipchamp, text to speech created right there.
Ooh. Cool.
This is Nolan from Nolan Hames Creative. You can check out nolanhamescreative.com/goodies, as we were just talking about, for lots of goodies and downloads. And also find out about the Better Deck Deck at betterdeckdeck.com and about training and design services that we have at nolanhamescreative.com. So there you go. Better Deck Deck, available on Amazon and also from my website.
And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Whiz. You can visit my website and blog at presentationwhiz.biz. Check in with me at the Presentation Guild at presentationguild.org. And I'm also on LinkedIn as Sandra Johnson, PowerPoint MVP, and Twitter as @PPTWhiz.
As always, it was wonderful to have you join us for a presentation conversation. Episode show notes are available at the Presentation Podcast website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com, where you can also send us episode suggestions, questions, or comments. Help us have more people join the conversation. Recommend the Presentation Podcast to your friends or leave a quick review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc., and new episodes release on the first and third Tuesday of each month.